Gemara talks a whole lot about all the various Yamim Tovim, and there's a recurrent theme that the Gemara speaks about with regard to a number of the Yamim Tovim, and that is the Gzeira Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amas Bershus HaRabim. What that means is as follows. We have a number of occasions where the Torah says you're allowed to do a particular mitzvah, and you're obligated to do a particular mitzvah, but the Rabbanim, the Chachamim, got involved and said, because we are concerned that you shouldn't violate a far worse Avera while doing that mitzvah, therefore they suspended our obligation. So the Gemara gives a number of examples where this comes up. Number one, every year before Pesach, we know that everybody has an obligation to bring a Korban Pesach. In order to be able to do that, everyone has to be tahar. Everyone has to be pure. So if somebody has had a contact with a dead body and now they are impure, so the way, the process that one can go about becoming pure again is with the Parah Aduma. You have the Parah Aduma and the water that's mixed together with the ashes from the Parah Aduma sprinkled on the person on day 3 and day 7, a whole procedure that needs to be done in order to do that. Says the Gemara, what if a person wants to become Tahar before Pesach in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Karban Pesach? However, the day 7 turns out to be on a Shabbos. Says the Gemara, you're not allowed to sprinkle them on a Shabbos. Why? Asked the Gemara. What can be wrong with sprinkling them on a Shabbos? The water is just water. It's not mukta. The water is not doing any malacha. I'm not doing anything. I just sprinkle the water on a person. So the Gemara says, the concern is, Shema yavirenu dalet amas b'shus harabim. The Gemara says, we're concerned, maybe the person who's sprinkling all the individuals in order to be metayer them is going to carry this bucket of water with the ashes in it for amas in the Rishus HaRabim, and then they're going to violate the Isra of Hotzah on Shabbos. That's the first case that we have in the Gemara in Psachim Daf Samach Tes. That's followed more famously by a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chav Tes, where the Gemara tells us that when Rosh Hashanah falls out on a Shabbos, really we're supposed to blow the shofar on that year as well. Why shouldn't we? Just like we have an obligation to keep all the other Yom Tovim that fall out on Shabbos, we should keep this one as well. So says the Gemara, really, on a level of Daraisa, we should be blowing the shofar on Shabbos. However, the Gemara tells us we have a Gzeira de Rabba, that Rabba was concerned maybe a person is not going to know exactly how to blow the shofar, and they were the one who was designated to blow the shofar tomorrow morning in Shul on Rosh Hashanah. So we're concerned maybe you're going to run around on Rosh Hashanah morning or Rosh Hashanah night to find somebody who's an expert shofar blower, and you're going to ask them to teach you how to blow the shofar, and you're going to violate the Isra of Hotzah on Shabbos because you're going to carry your shofar along with you to that person's house. The Gemara in Sukkah Daf Mem Beis tells us the very same idea, that for this reason, when Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, one is not allowed to shake the Lulav and Esrog on Shabbos. Why? There's no malacha involved in that. It's not even Muktzah. What's the problem? So the Gemara says the problem is, maybe you don't know how to do all the Nanuim, maybe you don't know how to wave this Lulav and Esrog around in all the different directions, and therefore we're concerned maybe you're going to go to somebody's house to learn how exactly to perform that mitzvah. The Gemara then in Maseches Beitzah picks up on the same idea and says, is one allowed to go ahead and be matvil kalim on Shabbos or Yom Tov? Am I allowed to go ahead and put kalim that I just bought this week and I want to use them for Shabbos, but I forgot to bring them to the mikvah? Am I allowed to go ahead and dip them into the mikvah on Shabbos? So the Gemara says that no, you're not allowed to do that because... not clear why the because. So the Gemara gives 3 or 4 different reasons, but one of the reasons the Gemara gives is Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amas Bershus HaRabim. Not everybody has a mikvah in their house. So maybe you're going to carry it down the block to go to the mikvah, and then you're going to violate the Isser of Hotzah on Shabbos. And finally, the Gemara tells us that we have the same consideration when it comes to Purim. Purim is only a Yom Tov Midrabbanan. It's a rabbinic invention. So if Purim falls out on Shabbos, we know that we have the practice not to lay in the Megillah on Shabbos because we're concerned, Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amas Bershus HaRabim. Look, not everybody knows how to lay in the Megillah. Maybe the person who's designated to be the Baal Kori is going to go to somebody else's house, carry the Megillah with them in order to learn how to do the Megillah properly. And therefore the Gemara says, we have suspended the obligation of Mikra Megillah when it falls out on Shabbos for this same consideration. So Tosis raises the question, what about Prismila? Pasuk tells us by Yom Hashmini, Yimol Basar Ulaso, the Pasuk in Parshas Tazria, we have an obligation to do a Prismila on the Yom Hashmini. Says the Gemara Masechah Shabbos, by Yom Hashmini, Afila B'Shabbos. The 8th day means 8th day no matter what. Even if the 8th day falls out on Shabbos, Yom Tov, you're supposed to do the Prismila. So Tosis asked the Kasha, why aren't you concerned there as well? The same way we tell somebody not to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbos, because maybe he's going to carry the shofar to learn how to blow it. And the same way that we say not to lay in the Megillah and not to shake the lulav and esrog on Shabbos. So why aren't we concerned? If a bris milah falls out on Shabbos, one should not go ahead and do the bris milah on Shabbos because maybe you're going to carry the knife, maybe you're not going to know what you're doing, and you're going to go ahead and violate the isra of hotzah bis Shabbos. That's Tosas Kasha. So Tosas answers and he says two reasons, but the answer that he gives basically is nobody would ever dare to agree to be a moel if they didn't know what they were doing. Every so often, as we know, you have somebody who agrees to be a balkuri in a shul and they don't know how to lane. That happens all the time, unfortunately. It shouldn't happen, but that's what happens. People get up to lane, they don't know the trup, they didn't really review it before. So there it makes sense that we're concerned. Shema Yavirenu, you agreed to be the balkuri on Mikra Megillah night. You don't really know what you're doing. Maybe you're going to carry the Megillah on Shabbos in order to learn how to lane it. However, he says, nobody would ever take a chance when it comes to a bris milah. Who would ever agree to be a moel if they didn't know what they were doing? So what are you concerned about? Shema Yavirenu, maybe I'm going to wake up the morning of the milah, I'm going to say, oh yeah, I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm going to have to go to the expert moel, bring my knife, learn how to do it. That's a very far-fetched consideration, and therefore Tosa says, we don't have to make gzeira. Like last night, Rabbi Pesach Kron spoke here. So somebody went over to him after his speech. He says, you know, I don't know, how do you do it every time? It's great. Every time I hear you speak, you're just perfect. Rabbi Kron said, I'm also a moel. Moel doesn't have any margin of error. Moel has to be perfect every time. So that's what Tosa says. Moel has to be perfect every time. He can't take chances. And therefore he says, that's why we don't have to be concerned when it comes to a bris milah. Again, the other Rishonim give other reasons why by bris milah we're not concerned. Some Achronim ask the question, what about Kriyas HaTorah every Shabbos? Why aren't we concerned? You shouldn't have Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos because maybe the Baal Koreh, as we've seen, doesn't always know how to lane. Maybe he's going to take the Sefer Torah to someone's house to practice, and he's going to violate the Isra of Hotzah B'Shabbos. It's an interesting question why we don't assume that way, but again, it's all predicated on the fact that we do have a concern that Shema Yavirenu, every once in a while, we're concerned someone might agree to do a mitzvah, they don't know what they're doing, and they're going to ask somebody else to assist them, and thereby violate the Isra of Hotzah. So this Techemet asks a very surprising question from the Netziv. And he says, well, if this is the case by shofar and by lulav and by Megillah and everything else, why aren't we concerned on Pesach night? He says there's a very particular way how you're supposed to eat the matzah. You have to do it behaseba, and you have to make a bracha, halachilas matzah, and you have to do yachatz, and not everybody knows all the halacha. Not like today, where most people are educated, they know what to do in our community. He says back in the day, most people were illiterate. Most people didn't even know how to read the Haggadah. So aren't we concerned when Pesach falls out on Shabbos, why aren't we concerned that there should be no mitzvah of achilas matzah? Because along with the achilas matzah comes the Haggadah and comes a person who doesn't know how to do the haseba properly. Am I supposed to lean this side, that side? Am I supposed to drink the cups of wine now, later? So the Netziv asked the question, why weren't we mevatel the mitzvah of eating the matzah and drinking the wine on Leil HaSeder? Because we should be concerned. Shema Yavirenu. Maybe you're going to run to the rabbi's house because you don't know what you're doing. So that's the question that he has. So the Netziv answers the kasha. He says, nah, ain't derech latzeis balayla. No one's ever going to go out in the streets at night. Even if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to be nervous to walk the streets at night, and therefore, no reason to make a gzeira. Really? So nowadays, when everybody walks around the streets at night, and the streetlights, and nobody's concerned, why don't we have this consideration as well? Anyway, the Techemet himself writes, I don't think this is what to be concerned about. How difficult is it to understand how you're supposed to perform the mitzvah of achilas matzah? Is it so hard? The rabbi just makes an announcement at the end of shul. Anyone who's not sure what to do, the answer is you lean on this side, you lean on that side, you drink the cups of wine here or there. It's not such a concern to be worried about. That's what the Stechemet writes. He thinks the question never got off the ground by Achilas Matzah. There's nothing to be worried about at all. If that's the case, how difficult is it to shake the Nanuim properly? I don't think that's so hard either. Just tell everybody, go around clockwise, you figure out which way to do it, up and down. I don't think that's so hard to teach people either. So why are we concerned by the Nanuim? And we're not concerned all of a sudden when it comes to the achilas matzah. A question, an interesting question, but this is a concept that we find with regard to many mitzvahs HaTorah and midrabanan that fall out and are supposed to be performed on Shabbos, that the Chachamim suspended our obligation to perform that mitzvah because they were concerned, Shema Yavirenu. I would be remiss if I wouldn't mention the incredible vart that was said over by Reb Leibele Eger. It's an amazing vart. The Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos Daf Hei, that when you talk about the malacha of hotzah b'shabbos, so that means you have to do an akira, you have to pick it up, and you also have to do a hanacha, you have to put it down. If you're missing one of those two components, you have not violated the aveira of hotzah. Another thing you have to do is, if you're in Rishus HaRabim, if you're in a public domain, the only time you can violate hotzah is if you pick something up, walk dalet amos, meaning you transport that item 4 amos, and then you put it back down. Then you relieve it. So that's the only way you can violate the aveir. So Ben Azer was of the opinion that mahalech is ka'omei dami. A person who's walking, perpetually walking, every step that you do is an akira and a hanacha. I pick my foot up, I put it back down, which means I pick up the item, I put it back down, so I can never accumulate dalet amos. I can never accumulate four amos. I can never violate the yisra of hotzah b'shabbos. Why? Because every step that I take, I'm going to step back down in one more step. And therefore, he says, you cannot violate the malach of hotzah b'shabbos because you cannot accumulate the requisite amount of space that's necessary to violate the malach of hotzah. So Tosas quotes the Yerushalmi. If Ben-Azi is of the opinion that mahalech ka'omed, every time a person is walking, every step they take up and down, stops the motion of dalet amos, ask Tosas, then how does he ever understand the violation of hotzah? What does it mean according to him? It is one of the lamates malachas on Shabbos. So what exactly does it mean? How can you have a prohibition of hotzah if there's no way of violating it? So Tosas says the answer is bikfitza. The answer, according to Ben-Azi, is when are you going to violate the Isser Hotzah? Only if you jump, if you fly, and you take a big jump, and you leap, Dalet Amos, in one shot, and you're holding something in your hand, that's when you're going to violate the prohibition of Hotzah. So Rabbi Leibele Eger, who was the grandson of Rabbi Kiva Eger, it's an interesting piece of history in itself. Rabbi Kiva Eger was a staunch person who was very opposed to the movement of Chassidus, and his own grandson, Rabbi Leibele Eger, who was a great Talmud Chacham on his own right, became a Chassidus Rebbe. So it's a very fascinating piece of history there. And there are some stories about the back and forth between the two of them. I even think Rabbi Kiva Eger's son-in-law became a Chassidus Rebbe. I forgot his name. It wasn't Rabbi Leibele Eger's father. It was his uncle who became a Chassidus Rebbe. He was the son-in-law of Rabbi Kiva Eger, and Rabbi Leibele Eger sent letters to the uncle to find out about some of the Chassidus Menhagim, which were totally against what his grandfather had believed in. So that's an interesting piece of history on its own. But Rabbi Leibele Eger was once learning with his grandfather, Rabbi Kiva Eger. And they got up to this Tosas and Masechet Shabbos Daf Hei, and Rabbi Kiva Eger asked him the following question. He said, if Ben-Azai says the only way you can violate the prohibition of Hotzah b'Shabbos is a person who does it bikfitza, somebody who jumps, who leaps Dalet Amos and makes it with the item four Amos away, he says, why were the Chacham concerned here? What did the Chacham say? You're not allowed to shake lulav on Rosh Hashanah, I'm sorry, on Sukkot that falls on Shabbos because maybe you're going to walk Dalet Amos with the lulav outside. You're not allowed to blow shofar because maybe you're going to carry the shofar Dalet Amos outside. You're not allowed to lay in the Megillah because maybe you're going to carry the Megillah outside Dalet Amos. What do you mean you're going to carry it outside? According to Ben-Azai, even if you carry it outside, we're only talking about somebody who's going to jump with the Megillah Dalet Amos and then he's going to get to the person's house by flying through the air Dalet Amos every time he takes a step. What's the likelihood of that ever happening? The Chachamim only make a takana, only make a gzeira, when it's something that's shchiach, when it's something that's probable. Over here, what's the probability that someone's going to hold their lulav and esrog, is going to hold their shofar, is going to hold their megillah and go flying through the streets, dalet amos at a time? It's very unusual, very unlikely. And therefore, Rabbi Kiva Eger said he doesn't understand, according to Ben-Azai, how do you understand the prohibition here of Chazal? Why did they tell you not to blow shofar? Why did they tell you not to shake the lulav? Why did they tell you not to lay in the Megillah? And Rabbi Leibele Eger looked back at his grandfather. He says, what are you talking about? If a person is holding a lulav and esrog or a shofar, who wouldn't be flying through the streets to go and be mekai in the mitzvah? You think you're going to walk slowly? Everybody's going to fly Dalet Amos at a time to go perform the mitzvah. And that's what they said later on. The Ger Rebbe added to this beautiful word. He said, and it's Ben-Azai l'shitaso. Because Ben-Azai himself says in Pirkei Avos, Havei Ratz the mitzvah kala kebachamura. So he said, Ben-Azai is the one who teaches us, Havei Ratz the mitzvah kala kebachamura. The way that you perform a mitzvah is you gotta run. Medaf Leufen, he said, you have to run as fast as you can to get to the mitzvah. So that's why Ben-Azai is of the opinion that Dalet Amos, in a Rishus HaRabim, Bikfitza, at one time, to jump four Amos at a time, that's nothing improbable at all. And that's the way Rabbi Leibele Eger explained why it is that the Chachamim were still concerned about somebody being Mavir Dalet Amos B'Rishus HaRabim, even though on the face value it would seem to be a very unlikely consideration, something that we shouldn't really worry about at all. Either way, this is the concern that we have with regard to many different mitzvahs, and the question that we'll leave off of before Mincha is, it's a very interesting consideration that the Gemara has, because nowadays the Shulchan Aruch writes in a number of places, in Hilchos Shabbos, in Hilchos Erevin, the Rama and the Shulchan Aruch both say it in a number of places that Ein lanu din rishus harabim mizman hazeh. It's very unlikely that we have a real domain that's considered to be a bona fide rishus harabim in our times, the way we would define it. And therefore, if we really assume that way, and that has major consequences lahalacha bizman hazeh, if we assume that we don't really have a domain which is called an official rishus harabim, So what is our concern nowadays? If all we're dealing with is Rishus HaYachim Nidrabana, Rishus HaRab Nidrabana nowadays, that's all we're talking about, how could the Chacham get up and make a gzera that I'm not allowed to blow shofar, and I'm not allowed to shake lulav, and I'm not allowed to lay in the Megillah, and all these other things, when at worst we're talking about somebody only violating an Isser Midrabanan of Hotzah B'Shabbos, which is only Midrabanan nowadays because we don't really have a Rishus HaRab Midraisa. So that's an important question that the Acharonim deal with, and Maharsham and others. How do we really understand nowadays why we're still so particular and so careful about this halacha, when in truth, the consequence of what you might violate is far less than the mitzvah that you're about to perform? So that's a question worth our consideration.